What was Denethor's plan for the War of the Ring? Did he even have one, or did he think it was doomed from the first? Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel we cover The Lord of the Rings in nerdy detail, as well as other great fantasy worlds like A Song of Ice and Fire and The Witcher. Welcome. This is the fourth in a series of videos breaking down what happened in the War of the Ring, the conflict that was raging in the background and sometimes foreground of the main action in The Lord of the Rings. The last couple of videos have been about the campaign in Rohan, but now let's turn our attention to Gondor, Minas Tirith, and Denethor. Denethor often comes across as completely hopeless in the War of the Ring. He abandoned his post and inspired despair, not hope, when Sauron's forces drew near. Not to mention his attitude to Faramir, a massive hindrance to the forces of good. While all that is true, Tolkien is very clear that Denethor is far from a weak leader, or at least he used to be a great leader, before the main story begins. The words he uses to describe him in the appendices are, "Denethor II was a proud man, tall, valiant, and more kingly than any man that had appeared in Gondor for many lives of men. And he was wise also, and far-sighted, and learned in lore. Indeed, he was as like to Thorongil as to one of nearest kin. When Denethor became steward, 2984, he proved a masterful lord, holding the rule of all things in his own hand. He said little, he listened to counsel, and then followed his own mind." So Denethor started out wise and a good ruler. He was masterful and far-sighted, which meant that he was very aware of the shifting geopolitical situation around him. Sauron had announced himself 3 decades earlier. Barad-dûr was being rebuilt, and the forces of evil were amassing on Gondor's doorstep. How might he counter this, the greatest threat any steward of Gondor had yet faced? Because, at the risk of skating very lightly over Middle-earth history, Gondor had been in slow retreat for centuries. Once they had kept watchtowers and castles encircling Mordor, ever vigilant for the returning shadow. But now those positions were abandoned. Osgiliath was largely rubble. Northern and western Gondor ceded to allies or abandoned. Gondor was a shadow of its former self. They had allies in Rohan, but enemies now to the south in Harad and Umbar. The magical technology that built their strongest structures was now long-forgotten lore. Well, the first thing Denethor seems to have done is gather ever more information about what was going on. Strong intelligence is the foundation of every good military strategy. And to get that intelligence, he turned to something the stewards had kept secret for years, the Palantir of Minas Tirith. Though the stewards, we read, deemed that it was a secret kept only by themselves, long ago I, that's Gandalf, guessed that here in the White Tower, one at least of the 7 Seeing Stones was preserved. In the days of his wisdom, Denethor would not presume to use it to challenge Sauron, knowing the limits of his own strength, but his wisdom failed, and I fear that as the peril of his realm grew, he looked in the stone and was deceived. Far too often, I guess, since Boromir departed. He was too great to be subdued to the will of the Dark Power. He saw nonetheless only those things which that power permitted him to see. The knowledge which he obtained was, doubtless, often of service to him, yet the vision of the great might of Mordor that was shown to him fed the despair of his heart until it overthrew his mind. We should pause for a moment to acknowledge the impressive fact that Denethor was strong enough not to be dominated by Sauron through the Palantiri. Sauron was using another Palantir that he had captured from Minas Ithil, in case you were wondering. Denethor also, it would seem, probably gained useful information from Saruman via their link through the Palantiri network. We read this in Unfinished Tales. Whether he thus made contact with the Orthanc Stone and Saruman is not told. Probably he did, and did so with profit to himself. Palantir lore is a whole other subject. I did a video on it if you're interested, but Denethor here was helped by the fact that he was the legitimate user of that stone as the rightful steward of Gondor. It made it easier for him to use his stone, but still Saruman and Sauron are both Maiar, so Denethor's strength of mind is impressive. But the important point for the plot is that despite Denethor's strength of mind, Sauron still had enough control to only show Denethor what Sauron wanted him to see, which was Mordor growing in strength, well beyond anything Gondor could resist. While this is good message management by Sauron, it's also true. Sauron's forces did far outweigh whatever Denethor could put into the field. Which probably explains why he never actively considered going on the offensive against Sauron. His father, Ecthelion II, did a little of that, authorising Thorongil, secretly Aragorn, to lead a mission to scupper the fleet of the Corsairs of Umber. But Denethor largely kept himself to digging in at Minas Tirith, and near the end sending Faramir to Ithilien, east of the River Anduin, to do a little bit of guerrilla warfare. Faramir was given enough rangers to slow down Sauron's accumulation of forces, but not enough to do any real damage. The plan seems to have originally been to use the River Anduin as a natural first line of defence against the advance of Sauron's army, whenever that came. That's where they made their stand when Sauron launched his first attack, led by the Nazgûl, and they did a pretty good job of it. We're told that Sauron was surprised by the strength of Gondor's resistance. But although Sauron's forces were held back on the east bank of the Anduin, this was done at significant cost, and the decision was made to destroy the last remaining bridge there. A strategic move to slow down Sauron's army when it came in full strength, but also a symbolic one. It was clear Denethor had no intention of moving any significant forces eastwards. From now on, they would be placing their trust, or hope rather, in Minas Tirith's walls. And potentially one other thing. Because it was around that time that Faramir and then Boromir got those dreams of a voice telling them to seek for the sword that was broken. In Imladris it dwells. There shall be counsels taken stronger than Morgul spells. There shall be shown a token that doom is near at hand, for Isildur's bane shall waken, and the halfling forth shall stand. Boromir and Faramir understood little of what it meant, but Denethor surely knew a lot more than he said. As a student of Gondor's history, he will certainly have known what Isildur's bane was and the sword that was broken. Given how highly he rated Boromir compared to Faramir, and how he expected his city to come under attack any day soon, I also think it's telling that he let Boromir, rather than Faramir or anyone else, go on this rather vague quest. What was he hoping? Well, I think the clue is in what he says to Faramir much later, when castigating him for letting Frodo go free. Boromir was loyal to me and no wizard's pupil. He would have remembered his father's need and would not have squandered what fortune gave. He would have brought me a mighty gift. So Denethor sent who he thought of as his best man to Rivendell because he thought Boromir would bring him the One Ring. As an aside, this does add another layer to Boromir's fall. It wasn't just him being greedy. He knew his father would want him to get the ring, and he loved his father and wouldn't want to disappoint him. And it wasn't just for himself. It was for the defence of Minas Tirith, to save lives. Thus do all of the ring's temptations start, with the best of motives. Boromir's failure is real and tragic, but it is also painfully relatable. What Denethor would have used the ring for is another matter completely. Gandalf and Denethor actually have a conversation about that when it becomes clear that the ring is now beyond either of their reach, with Frodo in Mordor. There are two follies to avoid, says Denethor. To use this thing is perilous. At this hour, to send it into the hands of a witless halfling, into the land of the enemy himself, as you have done, and this son of mine, that is madness. And the Lord Denethor, asks Gandalf, what would he have done? Neither. But most surely not for any argument would he have set this thing at a hazard beyond all but a fool's hope, risking our utter ruin if the enemy should recover what he lost. Nay, it should have been kept hidden, hidden, dark and deep, not used, I say, unless at the uttermost end of need. But set beyond his grasp, save by a victory so final that what then befell would not trouble us, being dead. So, if Boromir did bring the ring to Minas Tirith, as Denethor had hoped, Denethor's plan was to hide the ring away and not use it, unless at the uttermost end of need. I suspect, though, that the Witch King breaking down Minas Tirith's gate and orcs pouring in would have counted as the uttermost end of need, so he would have used it in the defence of Minas Tirith. Of course, The ring never made its way to Minas Tirith, so Denethor's last hope was not brought to him. Instead, he was left to do the only practical option he could think of, call in all the aid he could. In practice, this meant sending the Red Arrow to Rohan and later lighting the beacons. The beacons obviously look cooler, which is why they were used in the films, but they are also a rather obvious call that even Gondor's enemies could see. The Red Arrow could be delivered in secret days before the beacons were lit. And he called the banners, to use the Game of Thrones vernacular. Gondor had lost lots of its lands and people over the centuries, but still, particularly along its southern coast, there lay territories that owed their allegiance to Minas Tirith. The most famous of these is probably Dol Amroth. The problem was that Denethor delayed asking for Rohan's aid until very late, and they had their own local difficulties with Saruman to deal with, so given the distances involved, with the best will in the world, they couldn't be expected to arrive before the battle was joined. And the southern fiefdoms, well, they did send what support they could spare, but they were also under attack. The corsairs of Umber were raiding along the coast. Pippin sees those forces from the south arrive, and although they were made welcome, the disappointment in their numbers from the people of Minas Tirith is palpable. And that was all. Less than 3,000, full told. No more would come. Their cries and the tramp of their feet passed into the city and died away. The onlookers stood silent for a while. Dust hung in the air, for the wind had died and the evening was heavy. Already the closing hour was drawing nigh, and the red sun had gone behind Mindaluin. Shadow came down on the city. It's a depressing moment. To try to be fair to Denethor, he did think a bit more broadly than just sitting inside Minas Tirith and waiting for Sauron's army. He kept the garrison on the island of Cair Andros manned. That would at least slow down any northern crossing of the Anduin by Sauron's forces, and hopefully keep clear the route from Rohan so his allies could get there. And he also made sure that the route from Mordor to Minas Tirith wouldn't be without any opposition, sending a small force out under Faramir to do what it could. "And what of Cair Andros?" said the prince. That's Prince Imrahil of Dol Amroth. "That too must be held if Osgiliath is defended. Let us not forget the danger on our left. The Rohirrim may come, and they may not. But Faramir has told us of great strength drawing ever to the Black Gate. More than one host may issue from it, and strike for more than one passage." "Much must be risked in war," said Denethor. "Cair Andros is manned, and no more can be sent so far. But I will not yield the river and the Pelennor unfought, not if there is a captain here who has still the courage to do his lord's will." I said we would try to be fair to Denethor because he was clearly aware of both issues, but the forces he committed to both were inadequate to the task, and him passively aggressively sending Faramir out was surely loaded with more than just military planning. In truth, he had largely given up hope by this point. Not entirely, that was to come only when the battle was joined, but enough that the land's defences were just that, defences. He could see no clear path to victory. It was just a matter of him delaying the inevitable. So this was his plan, slowly shifting in focus as his hope of success diminished. First, he focused on gathering information about what was going on and fought to keep control of valuable defences like Osgiliath. When the possibility came up to get the ring, he sent his best man to get it. Not that he would have immediately used it, just as a matter of last resort. That was the plan anyway. I suspect the ring would have tempted him sooner. Seeing Sauron's forces massing for attack once more, he called on Rohan and the southern fiefs to support him. He did not abandon Cair Andros or the Anduin, but the forces he allocated to each were limited and probably not up to the task, and he seemed to know that. Faced with what he thought were impossible odds, he hid behind Minas Tirith's strong walls, and when Faramir fell, he broke. There was no plan now, other than a merciful death. As he says, better to burn sooner than late, for burn we must. Go back to your bonfire, and I go now to my pyre. No tomb for Denethor and Faramir, no long slow sleep of death embalmed. We will burn like heathen kings before ever a ship sailed hither from the west. The west has failed. go back and burn. The irony, of course, is that one of the final straws was seeing through the Palantir the black sails of the Corsairs of Umbar sailing up the Anduin. He thought it was them, but it was Aragorn. Aragorn brought with him reinforcements from the fiefdoms of the south, and at the same time arrived his ally Theoden with the Rohirrim. His calls for help were actually answered. There was hope where he saw none. But we will cover all that in the next video in this series, looking at the Battle of the Pelennor Fields itself. The deeper tragedy is that in another time, Denethor could have been a good ruler, wise, far-sighted, and listening to counsel. We often give Denethor very short shrift, rightly for what he did and didn't do, but let's give him some small credit as well. He saw the scale of the challenge, and in calling the banners and on Rohan, his plan did actually win the battle. Denethor is far from a hero, but is also, I personally feel, more of a figure to be pitied than reviled. A great man broken by tragedy. My War of the Ring playlist is on the left of your screen now, or if you'd like to see more videos on other aspects of the world of J.R.R. Tolkien and the Lord of the Rings, please click on the link to the playlist in the centre of your screen. Thanks for watching. That's all for this time. I'll see you again soon.